This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another podcast of Flight Training the Way I See It, hosted by me, Mike Schifflett from CFI Bootcamp. And this is our February sort of podcast newsletter. If you're on our newsletter feed or group, I should say, email list, then you will get the card copy of the newsletter. It's formatted with all kinds of nice things, and it has clickable links to sort of resources and up-and-coming events and things of that nature. You can go to our website at cfibootcamp.com, and you'll find a way on the first page to be able to do that. So that's the first thing. And it is February of 2022, and this is another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. We've changed the format a bit. We used to do two per month. Now we're doing one per month, and it will be a video podcast as well, and it will cover the newsletter each month. And any additional things that come out, we'll make a special case for. And the reason we're doing that is because every week we do something called the Power Hour. And this is a one-hour, full-content, free webinar. And we have currently between 80 and 150, 200 people that will join up on that every Saturday at noon Eastern time. So that's UTC right now minus 5. And that will get you to the Power Hour time frame. The way you access it is you go to our website and look for the Power Hour. It'll be a red bar at the bottom of a page, or you can, you'll find it there. Or you can just Google probably Power Hour, CFI Bootcamp, and find it. And then you join a newsletter, not a newsletter, you join a email thing there. And then what will happen is that email is kind of important because, number one, it gives you the link. And the second thing is you get a reminder midway through the week, somewhere on Wednesday or Thursday, about what this Power Hour topic is going to be coming up. And you get two more emails. One is an hour before we start, and then a minute or so before we start. So that way you can be reminded and not miss the episode. This will be our 90th episode coming up. So we're going to do something really special for the 100th. But we have done 90, we will have done on Saturday 90 hours, 90 Power Hours. Pretty amazing. We do things like deep dives into eights on pylons. We've done the mathematics for that. We've done marketing like 101 for flight instructors. We've done how to do your CFII first as an initial flight instructor certificate, not going the traditional route. We've done guest spots. David St. George from SAFE, is director of SAFE, has done talks on CFIs, CFI mentor programs, and had Hobie Tomlinson, who does knows more about multi-engine flying than anybody that I know, and then he's talked. We also have Gary Reeves, who's the IFR guy, Gary GPS guy in the pink shirt, Reeves, and anyway, he comes on. So all those speakers get, you know, usually four slots or so per year. We'll have AOPA on. Jamie from AOPA will be giving a presentation, so join up on those. They're free to you, and again, the whole purpose of all of that is to just to get information out to the community and sort of get some of this tribal knowledge that doesn't seem to be written down anywhere sometimes out to you. So let's begin with something that I've worked on for a long time and something I've tried to figure out how to populate, and you might be interested in this. So it's our 7-day class. You know, we teach a 7-day class. So what we wanted to do is make it so any two-year CFI, almost any two-year CFI in 200 hours, could actually teach our class at a location, and it wouldn't have to be one of our people there. So it would use all of our resources, and so the only way I could get that to happen, of course, is to write a syllabus and then to write a lesson plan for every hour. There's 42 hours in this program, and then the lesson plan would have to have the resources. And the idea would be to use, initially, to use a spreadsheet, which is what I've done, Excel spreadsheet, and it sort of, you click on a cell there and it'll open up the resources for you, whether it's a PDF or a PowerPoint or whatever the resource might be. It'll be there and it'll be attached to the lesson, so you don't have to go looking for anything. If for some reason the link doesn't work, we still provide a folder with day by day with all of the resources in there, so you've got offline capability as well. And so that's how that works. Now, the interesting thing about that is we produce more CFI-specific training material than any other company, probably than any the rest of them combined. These include lesson plans, our own lesson plans, regulations, scenarios within those regulations and solutions, flow charts, rewrites of the FAR. I completely rewrote Part 61 to make it centric to airplane single engine land and flight instructors, how we use it in particular. So the way we teach the FAR, is, by the way, is we use that document as a top-down view into the regulation. And so then you understand like what pieces of it pertain to you or pertain to your situation. And then the homework that evening is then to read that regulation. So we do that. We also have created FOI roadmaps, which are a mind map for every chapter of the FOI, how all the pieces are related. That seems to be something that's lost on a lot of people. It's probably the biggest single thing that we hear the most about is the FOI. And I think even in our 7-day class, if someone else is teaching it, you kind of have to know the material. But we do have a solution for that as well. So the solution for it is the student can use our, we have an online course just for the FOI. So they could use that and the instructor could then just review it. So that would, and the FOI components of the 7-day class represent about, I'd say 4.5 hours or so, probably 4.5 hours, maybe 5 on the outside. So that's not, it's less than 10% of, about 10% of the course. So there's that. And our pass rate is over 90% on the first attempt. So a lot of people, companies will say their pass rate's 100%. Yeah, but that's after like 6 attempts, right? That doesn't count, right? So there's that. So now there's a real need in our industry to create more CFIs. And the issue is the number of CFIs that are qualified and who feel comfortable training these applicants. So that's the second part. There's a lot of qualified CFIs. But do they feel comfortable or they're able to do it? We found that most CFIs that are qualified to teach initial instructors don't really feel comfortable doing it. While they're great at training people for private, instrument, commercial, they don't have the same feeling about the flight instructor stuff. There are good reasons, but most of them stem from teaching the FOI, fundamentals instructing, and these regulations and endorsements, these complicated scenarios that a lot of DPEs and people would use. So because you don't, you're not teaching this every day, and the FOI is something that probably people have just chucked out of their mind after the test, then now you have to teach these things. Also, a lot of instructors are only doing like soloing students and then doing privates and the occasional once in a blue moon commercials. And so these nuances of how you take people like with a rotorcraft commercial pilot certificate, and then you take them into airplane single engine land, really isn't there. It's like the knowledge is gone if it was there to begin with. So that's why we created these the syllabus, right? So there's that. Now there are other reasons too, and it can also be because there's a lack of aeronautical knowledge, right? Because this is and also the fact that this is you don't fly a lot in this rating. We finish people between 10 and 15 hours typically if they're qualified. It means they're current and they have taken a commercial flight test in the past couple years. Then yes, then we can do that, right? So there's so much. I mean, there's all the content in the Aviation Instructor's Handbook, Airplane Flying Handbook, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, ACs and more. And as far as a good syllabus, they really aren't that good. They're designed for minimum Part 141 requirements. And they just go through the technical subject areas in the PTS, and they really kind of are leaning on the instructor to teach you how to teach it, right? But they just really go through these things as knowledge nuggets, right? And so again, some of the syllabuses will require the students to make their own lesson plans, and this will take what could be a month project into a year or more if you write your own. Right. So to address this, we wanted to have a classroom experience to be more of a hands-on problem-solving thing. That's kind of what we wanted to do, because it's only by using the information that you really get to understand it. And so what we did was we made an online course, which is 42 hours long, and it has a workbook, has assessment, and many, many things in there. It also comes with CFI Essentials, which is a resource library in 4 folders of POHs. It has our custom content, like these flowcharts I was telling you about. Lesson plans are in there, everything you can imagine. And the FAA handbooks, all the ACs are organized. And there's legal interpretations in there, which I've retitled so you can do a quick scan of them and see what the content is and see if it's relevant. So all those things are in there and the online course. And so the online course is lecture, and it's then using the workbook and the self-study guide, right? And then what that allowed us to do was allowed us then to create an immersion class, a seven-day class that you have to have taken the online course first or it won't be enough. I can tell you that because you'll be behind and you won't get it. So doing that is important. And then the seven-day immersion class then focuses on lecturing only those things that are really tough to understand. And then it's using the information. Like one of the, we do a lot of things by scenario. And the scenarios would be things like taking a someone who maybe has a glider rating and maybe it's commercial pilot certificate, and then giving them an airplane, single engine land, the training requirements for that, the, how do we solo them? They're not a student pilot, how's that gonna happen? All a lot of things flush out of that kind of scenarios. And then you begin using the AC for endorsements, AC61-65 hotel, and you begin using this information. And from that, what happens is you are doing your job. You're basically being guided through how you're gonna operate as a flight instructor. And we listen to you teach lesson plans and critique that. Then we give student pilot scenarios. The first scenario you get is let's solo a student, right? What things do we have to do? What are the training requirements? What are the endorsements? So what are the limitations? And so we go through all of that, and then we go through the regulations for a student pilot. Well, subpart A, which is general, we go through that. Subpart B, then we cover student pilots, recreational pilots, private pilots, commercial, sport pilots, and flight instructors. We have scenarios for all of that. And in our resources and in the syllabus, those scenarios come up for you automatically, along with the solutions. So if you don't even know how to do it yourself, you'll have the solution set right there. So that's kind of interesting. If you have forgot, maybe you forgot how to do it. So that's what we have coming out. So that's the thing I guess I would tell you. We're gonna make that available. I would say to send me an email at mike@cfibootcamp.com if you're interested in that. And if it's just gonna be a one-time student here and there, that's not really, we're not really quite interested in that. What we're trying to do is look into major markets like Chicago, like Dallas, like Phoenix, like New York, some segments of New York City in around Long Island. And create mini-me's of us there, but you doing it, right? So doing frequent enough programs to where it would make sense to do it. So, and then monetizing it, we're initially gonna monetize it through just the idea that it's going to drive online course sales for us. And then you've got this thing to use for some small amount of money. But it won't work without the online course. I have designed it specifically for that because that also constrains the student's amount of time they need to spend with you. And you can absolutely see light at the end of the tunnel with a program like that, as opposed to meeting once a week, and I don't know what we're gonna do. Did you do and the typical things are like, well, let's teach me something about this stability, aerodynamics. Then the instructor might say something like, well, why don't you go create a lesson plan on that? That means they don't know it, right? So, and then you go over it. So that's what we've got going. So this will fix all that in general. It'll keep you on the right path. And if you do enough CFI training or want to do enough CFI training, then this will do it, okay? All right, so let's look then into the next thing is what do we do about DPEs that are testing outside of the standard? Whoo! Now there is a hot potato, I can tell you, because no one likes that, right? So, and this happens quite often. And a lot of it is, I wouldn't say egregious, you know, but I would say that, have you had this experience maybe where you were being asked a question on a practical test and you have no idea where this information is coming from, or you haven't seen it? You know, that you've never heard it explained or talked about this way? You know, so welcome to the club is what I say, right? We've all heard about that. Standing, testing outside the reference in each area of operation in the PTS or ACS is not permitted, so you know. So this means that what happens is we have GPEs who want to ask questions because they, in their experience, feel these questions and these scenarios are important. Yet if you look into the references, which are in the PTS at the very beginning of each area of operation, it says references, you'll find that the standard is, the resources are there, the question or the content can't come from anywhere else but in those references. Yet we have DPs that are asking questions that can't be found in those documents. So I'll give you an example. So we have one DPE that asks the students about the inner workings of a magneto. He wants to know what's inside of that and how it kind of generally works. So that is not a question that can be asked of you, because that information isn't in the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. It isn't in the POH. It isn't in any FAA handbook for pilots. You'll find it in the AMT, Aviation Maintenance Technician, handbook for the power plant. That's where you'll find it. But that you're not, it's just like, imagine if an AMP got questions related to airspace and got things related to endorsing, how do you endorse a commercial pilot rotorcraft to airplane single engine land? That'd be kind of irrelevance, right? But maybe the DP who's doing the designated maintenance examiner who's doing the test thinks that's important, right? I don't know. It's the same kind of thing. You could say some of them would say, I guess, that, hey, these aren't pass-fail questions. They're just to test the depth and scope of the knowledge. It's still not allowed. And it does set a bad, the student feels not successful. So it feels like they're failing. And even though they don't know it's not pass-fail. I mean, you didn't say, when you asked the question, you didn't say, hey, this is not a pass-fail question. This is just something I want to know. And then, of course, you don't say that because they don't say that because you're not supposed to do that. So then all of a sudden you have evidence now that just said that, hey, I'm going to ask you something that doesn't really count. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's interesting, right? So, so there's other things, you know, so DPEs, can ask anything they want, but basically only out of the references. Like they can't ask things about, for example, celestial navigation as much as they want to ask it. So the information does exist, by the way. It's in the Flight Navigator's Handbook. If you've ever picked up that book, that's something. It's a really nicely done book by the FAA as well. And it does go over that grid navigation, all manner of things. It's quite complicated. So then, and a lot of this reason is sometimes this content maybe existed in a previous version of the handbook, of the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge or the Airplane Flying Handbook or something, but it doesn't exist today. So, for example, if you read the section on steep spirals in the current handbook, you don't see any indication, or they don't tell you that when you change a bank angle, the airspeed's going to change on Y, right? They don't say that. But they do say it in the 2004 version. Or in the steep spiral, they don't tell you why you enter this maneuver upwind. If you look at it, it's the only kind of ground reference-ish maneuver that we enter upwind. And if you look in the 1965 flight training handbook, it will tell you why. It's basically because you're going to be in a position to land straight in after you've done a number of turns, or you can be high enough, you can make a modified pattern. That's the reason. But anyway, so those questions aren't allowed because they aren't in the current handbook, right? So DPEs don't seem to read, or not all of them, but some of them don't seem to be current with the information. They know what they know, and it's the same reason we have problems with DPEs insisting on using this E6B. I mean, you know, there's no other industry that does that. None. So really, we'll see if I can find any others. No one goes back to what worked then. People use what works now and what's good now. Now the principles of navigation are important to be taught, but you can do that much more visually and a lot better without using that device. So things like that. So then, here's what I would suggest that you do, because I think we can get this to self-correct a little bit, especially if you're in the area. We can give the DPE a kind of a little soft landing on this thing. So if the DPE is about ready to fail the student, or you think that's happening, that you're unsatisfactory performance, then what you need to do is you need to ask the DPE, say, okay, I get it, I understand, right? But this is kind of bothering me personally a little bit because I don't know where this information is located. I thought I went through the references, and you pull out the PTS or ATS here and you show the references and you say, in these places here, and I just don't see that. I don't know, maybe it's there, and I say, can we look and find and look at it, see? And then open it up. And then, you know, you get a chance to say, the DPE gets a chance to say, oh, well, that was must have been in a previous handbook. I'll have to redo my plan of action then, or in and around that. Okay, and then carry on. Right? But if it's there, well, you're done. So, you know, you are responsible to know it. So that's what I would like to do, because it gets the DP a chance to kind of have a soft landing on that and not be confronted. Because if the disapproval goes into IACRA, then only the FISDO can unring the bell, right? And so that's going to be tricky because the FISDO is going to say, why are we doing it? And then I said, well, I asked this question, and it really wasn't, why'd you ask it? You know, aren't you current on the plan of action? I mean, don't you know you can't? That'd be those kind of things come up, but no one wants that. So that's what I would say to do. So you can do that, and I think that's not a bad thing to say. But I hope this helps. So please don't use it to challenge a DPE or something that you should have known. Look at the references to be sure it's outside the reference before, you know, going down that line, right? So there's that. And the last thing we're going to cover today in terms of content is the CFI population and what I think is a very necessary program. So according to the FAA Airman Registry, there are around 120,000 flight instructors. Believe it, 120,000. Of those flight instructors, there's around 20,000 that are considered active. So this means that they have recommended at least one person for a practical test within the expiration of their pilot, of their flight instructor certificate. So within 2 years, they've recommended at least one person. The FAA doesn't consider someone active if they're not recommending people for practice. That's how they keep track of it, right? So that wouldn't seem to be a lot of, that would seem to be a lot of CFIs, 20,000. But if you dig deeper into the data, you'll find that of those 20,000 active CFIs, over 80% have been a CFI for less than a year. Wow. So we have very, very new and often very young instructors teaching most of the students. That leaves about 4,000 instructors with more experience than that. And so of the CFIs that have held their certificate over 2 years, there's around 3,000 or so that are active, right? So what does this mean? So it means that the student pilots can learn to fly or add ratings. They aren't necessarily getting the depth and scope of knowledge and experience that only can be acquired by having taught for a while. So for example, one of our students started flying in April as a brand new zero time pilot. He finished the CFI and CFII in August of the same year. Wow, 5 months, zero to CFII. So he's a highly motivated student, to say the least. But now, where's the experience? Well, what experience is there? He's never flown in the winter or the autumn. Everything he knew about flying, he learned in about 150 days. So this isn't, now in his case, he was an older student with a lot of experience running companies and doing some other things, so, and teaching kind of things. So that worked to his advantage for sure. But what about the younger CFI with a similar result? So just because you have a green thing in your plastic card, says flight instructor, in your pocket, it means you passed a test. Could you pass it with a different DPE on another day? I don't know. But if you have depth and scope of knowledge, the answer to that should be yes. So this is the problem. So what we really need is a mentoring program. But I know the name isn't good, because it implies that new CFIs don't know enough. Less than, I suppose, you know, is the thinking, right? I'm less than if I need a mentor. So I prefer another word. I really don't have a good word for it yet, but I'm working on it. But I think something more closely aligned to residency after medical school, you know, getting the practical experience, and you're still a doctor, right? You're still a doctor, you are, but you don't quite have the experience, so we need to keep you a little bit longer in the program and give you now practical experience. So there's been many people, this by the way doesn't have to be a new regulation, and I would propose not to have a new regulation. In Transport Canada, you can't be a full flying flight instructor until you're under the supervision of someone for a while. And this was the same in Europe for a while. I don't believe it's the same now, but at that time, you could be an assistant flying instructor, and then you had to, I think it was 200 hours or 100 hours of instruction given. You couldn't solo anybody, couldn't send anybody across countries yet. That had to be done by something called a qualified flying instructor, so a QFI. And so those systems are okay, but the problem with it is our entire industry is built on 1,500 hours, our entire, and we have people coming into the program, and they're not going to stay long enough to benefit from long-term mentoring. They'll benefit from short-term mentoring, which means that we won't be able to get huge amount of depth and scope of knowledge in them, but we can help sort of cover the hard spots, the spots where they might get in trouble with a student or a particular operation, or maybe they don't understand some part of the regulation as clearly as they should, might be endorsing incorrectly. Or maybe, end up doing stage checks for people like that. That could be the informal policies, I guess what I'm saying, informal ways of doing it. So at Advantage Aviation in Palo Alto, they have solo phase checks for people who haven't done it some length of time. I believe it's you're in a CFI for less than a year and X number of hours, and then you have to have someone else look at that student first before you can solo them. Same with the practical test and so on. And that is a form of forced mentoring, but it's there, and it's a good thing to do. But they're, kind of light hands on it, not heavy hands. So there's another club called West Valley Flying Club that has a lot of procedure in and around it. And there is a phase check or something for about every operation there is, right? And so that may be a little over that side, but it works for both places. So that's what we can do. The thing I would hope for is that I would like to see organizations, and they're working on it, like SAFE, Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, and NAFI, to sort of drive that. Again, the thing I think the problem is, the less than. I'm a flight instructor, but I'm less than because I need this mentoring. But like I say, all basically industries like that have some sort of residency time, right? Something like that. So I think that's really what we need in our industry. And I'd like to see if we can mutually think of some things that might be some first steps to get some good buy-in. But I think it comes from AOPA, SAFE, NAFI. And I think these drive that. The issues with SAFE and NAFI are that they're gonna collect flight instructors who wanna be flight instructors. So that means, or wanna stay in flight training for the most part, not all parts, but for a lot of it. People who are just building 1,500 hours a time see those things as waste of time because they're not gonna stay in it long enough to really use much of that. Now, because both organizations offer one-third off four-flight subscription, if you're a member, and a membership's $45, then that's a good reason to get the membership. But I don't know how many people are really participating in that. But the idea here is, anyway, to get experience. Because remember, you can buy a certificate, you can buy all the way all your ratings, but you can't buy experience. It's just something you cannot buy. One of my students was an anesthesiologist, and he was talking about how he says a lot of the new students know a lot of things coming out. They're a good anesthesiologist. He says, but he says the older ones, the ones, he says, with experience, you know how to get out of trouble. He said, so if we get into trouble, we may not prepare the most immediate solution, but we always know how to get out of trouble. And that's not necessarily the case with a new anesthesiologist who knows the latest things. So I think that's the case here is not instead of a trouble, we know what to do. And we know how to steer clear of trouble. And if you get with the right CFI, they can really help you. And for you CFIs who want to be mentors, team up with a younger CFI or an experienced one. It doesn't have to even be younger. And here's what happens when that relationship occurs. One thing is the new flight instructor gets to give you income, extra income, because you get to do stage checks that you wouldn't have done before and things of that nature. And also, that new CFI is basically telling you, I respect you and your opinion. And so a little peer stuff, right? And then the second thing is for the instructor who's the mentor at CFI, like for me, example, I would say, hey, I don't want to do this night flight. You want to do this night flight? You want to do this flight review? Can you fly with Bob on Thursday? Because now you're my go-to for that. Because now I know you, right? And that's part of helping you and also giving you back business. So it's a very mutually good system to do. Well, we're coming up on the end, but let's review a few things and tell you what's going on. So I'm writing a new book. It's a 172S model systems book. I'm not sure if I'm going to include N model stuff in there, but S model for sure. It should be out in a few weeks. I've got it all written, so it's just putting in the figures now. And I redid fuel system, electrical system, and used real engineering drawings because the drawings that are you can understand them. The drawings that are in the handbook are just not very good. And they don't, sometimes are incomplete. And sometimes they say things, don't say what those things are. Like they'll say a contact or a relay, solenoid. But yet you look in the text of the book and then there's no talk about it. It's just, why even say it? Why put it on a diagram if you don't know what it is? So there's that. That'll come out. That's a Currently about written, it's 35 pages, and so I guesstimate it'll be something around 50. It basically rewrites the system section of the POH. Or not rewrites, it expands upon it. There's that. I've got that going. I'm working on the pilot's diet, which is how I lost 40 pounds and still maintain that. And so it's basically it's called the pilot's diet, keeping your medical past 65. Because if you're going to do this for a living, you're going to need to keep your medical certificate. And the biggest single thing that will keep you from not having your medical certificate is being overweight. Because you will become pre-diabetic over some time. Most people will. Or you have other issues. You have surgeries for your knee. You have many, many things. Health, hypertension. You have a lot of stuff. Heart conditions. So if you can keep your weight down, you can really extend your quality of life and the fact that you can fly past 65. So if you go out on disability in an airline, you're not going to get full pay. So, and you may need that because you got stuff that, you know, you were banking on, right? So there's that. So that'll be coming out, and it's going to be interesting because the book is written like a checklist. So there's a pre-flight checklist, there's a before takeoff, there's climb, then there's a cruise before landing, and landing after landing, and then finally there's emergency checklist. So we've got all that. So that'll be coming out to soon, and I'll let you know about that here in the next couple weeks. So we've got that going. Do join our power hours. They're free every Saturday, noon to 1 Eastern time, Eastern Standard Time, which will be soon to be Eastern Daylight Time, so in a few weeks from now. So, and always good content there. You can go to our website, cfibootcamp.com, sign up for the newsletter, and also you can sign up for the power hour, and you'll get your email reminders on those. You can also join Bootcamp Plus. Bootcamp Plus is a membership site, but the basic membership is free. And there's a lot of goodies in there, and I would encourage you to do it. We've got a lot of extra video content on things like what do the airplane antennas, what are they, where are they, what do they do, why are they the size, you know, where are they located? So things like that, just a few minutes here and there, and those come out to you. And so on a rainy day, you have something to watch. And there's also a complete private pilot course in there that was basically a Zoom recordings of a private pilot course that we did about a half year ago, something like that. And so that's available, and that's free. So then if you want more things, you can join other things if you want in there. So that's something to do. And then March newsletter will be out about mid-March. I'm working on that now. And just continuing to write. I'm writing a lot and getting some new product ready. If you're interested in the 7-day push and play syllabus for initial CFI, the immersion course, then send me an email at mike@cfibootcamp.com and I'll get back with you and see what we've got going on there. Again, I'd like it to be in a place that wants to do CFI training and doesn't have something in place yet, or does that currently and just finds their system isn't working as well as it should, but that creates a number of CFI. I don't have a particular number in mind, but if I were thinking, I would say at least 5 or 10 per year, something in this region would be, or more. If you're just doing one a year, this is probably not, it's going to be a lot of effort for not a lot of result back, I think, on your end. but there's that. Okay, so until next time, this is Flight Training the Way I See It from Mike Shiflett at CFI Bootcamp, and thanks for listening. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinions.